Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Landmarks in the News. Today is Galactic Activation Portal Day on the 13th Moon Peace Calendar, the 23rd day of the Galactic Hawk Moon of Integrity, Celi Root Chakra, White Magnetic Wind Day. The affirmation is, I unify in order to communicate. Attracting breath, I seal the input of spirit with a magnetic tone of purpose. I'm guided by my own power doubled. It's also Gregorian calendar, Monday, March 1st, 2010. I'm your host, Christiana, coming to you live from the Coove. That's Vancouver, Washington, across the river from Portland, Oregon, as I will be doing most every Monday, 3:30 p.m. Today, it's at 1:30. It was supposed to be to accommodate my guest schedule, and I messed up. I'm sorry about that. Let's get Vanessa Compton, the Labyrinth Society 2010 Gathering Concurrent Workshops Coordinator, on the line. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, Christiana.
Vanessa, I apologize. I got my times messed up, but I'm so glad you stayed on the line. Thank you so much for being patient with me. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Labyrinth in the News.
It is my pleasure to be here, and no time is wasted, Christiana.
Okay, well, I skipped the whole intro to just because I saw you on the line. I said, oh, blessed be, thank you. There is a God, thank you. I was all the way over on the other side of Vancouver, and then I looked at my schedule, and I said, you know what? I've changed this. I'm supposed to be on the line at 1:30, and that's 10 minutes from now. So anyway, so let's get right to talking to you about what you do. You are the Concurrent Workshops Coordinator for the Labyrinth Society 2010 Gathering, which is going to be held in New Harmony, Indiana in November. Can you tell us a little bit, first of all, how long have you been involved with the Labyrinth Society, TLS, and what had you take on this job for this particular...
Oh, it's my pleasure to respond to this. I'm so excited to have this position. And I'll tell you how I got there. I first went to the Labyrinth Society gatherings in 2000, I think it was, the one in Denver, Colorado, and I gave a presentation there. And then I didn't get back until Atlanta in 2008. And then I met Cordelia Rose, who's one of the co-gathering chairs, and I met her in Jill Guilfoyle's movement class, and where we got to be courses doing yoga. So, I mean, how can you resist anyone like that? Possible. Joan will be back this year, and I'm really excited about that. And I also met Ben Nicholson, who had a presentation of sketches from his then Venice Biennale installation on labyrinth design. My story with Ben is there's a whole other story about him, and I'll get into that later. But then I was delighted to meet them, and then in Portland we became a bit closer friends. And when they announced that they had been volunteered, really, to be the gathering chairs and invited me to work with them doing the program, I jumped at the chance because they are just charming, lovely, smart people and a pleasure to work with. And also I wanted to get more involved with the Labyrinth Society itself because over the years I've just been so impressed by the dedication that so many people have shown to steer this organization really through all its growing pains all these years. It's now, I would say, a getting to be mature organization. And there's so many people that have influenced me over those years. I think I'm thinking now about Toby Evans's history that she gave in Atlanta that had us all falling off our chairs with laughter, the story of how it all started from Toby's unique perspective, and I'm delighted. Mm-hmm. She's doing the opening and closing celebrations today. She's a hoot. But there's so many others. You know, Robert Ferry was really instrumental to my career. Helen Curry was encouraging. Jeff Sayward, what a trooper. I mean, he's really changed the face of cultural history, hasn't he? And Kimberly.
He certainly has.
He really has. There's so many people I could go on and on, and I'm going to leave somebody out, so I'm going to stop there. But it was just such an honor to be invited to work with people like that. So that was one of the motivations. I do have experience on selection committees here in Canada for the Arts Council, various Arts Councils jurying, and I've certainly in my life as an artist and an academic written thousands of proposals for exhibitions and scholarly presentations. So I had an idea of what both sides of the selection committee might be like. And the really final reason was, well, there's lots of reasons but that I can articulate, is I wanted to see, now that the Labyrinth Society is in our 12th year now of this gathering, what are people coming up with in their practices now? And I've always been so impressed with Lauren Artress's position that the labyrinth is an organizing principle, and how to ask yourself, well, what's my life like with using the labyrinth as an organizing principle? So I'm looking forward to working with an organization for whom that is an organizing principle, if you see what I mean. So there's a lot of benefits for me in this, I have to say.
And where are you located in Canada?
I'm in Ottawa, national capital. My exciting news about that is that my business partner and I have just last August installed a full Church Cathedral Labyrinth in the cathedral in Ottawa, which calls itself, well, it probably officially is the Cathedral for the Armed Forces and the Cathedral for the National Capital Region. So it's quite an honor to be there, and we feel we can have some influence. Not to say that too loud. We could introduce some ideas, some organizing principles, labyrinth as organizing principle ideas. So that's what I did.
In the Canadian capital. How wonderful. I'm going a little sidestep because I'm intrigued. I didn't know that you'd done this. Is this this new labyrinth, is it in the floor, actually permanent labyrinth in the floor of the cathedral?
It's a painted labyrinth, so it's sort of semi-permanent. I have to say it's a very, the cathedral's known for its music program, and especially its men and boys choirs, and the boys play hockey on it, on the labyrinth, so it's getting a bit dinged. It's painted onto an ancient linoleum floor in the parish hall. So, but that building that it's in is scheduled to be rebuilt in, okay, it's Anglican, or what you'd call it, Episcopalian. So it'll be good 10 years before it has to be rebuilt. They say 3, it'll be 10. So we put it in as a sort of a dry run for the later building program, just to get the parish and congregation used to the idea. But it's been very successful so far. That's another story.
Interesting. Well, okay, let's go back to, so what does the concurrent workshops coordinator do?
Oh, plenty. I divided it up, shaking in my boots, to the three chunks of work. There's three chunks of timing, really. The first and most important one is getting the proposals in. So to do, and the TLS has been really organized about providing the list of duties and the timeline. So that's all gone really smoothly so far. I've helped write the proposal so the guidelines are as clear as possible, and determine the selection criteria, which is always a good place to have a good exchange of views. This year it must relate to the, well, every year it must relate to the theme of the gathering, and this year it's New Harmonies in the Labyrinth. So trying to pose the language of the proposal so that that's really enhanced was a challenge. Then I put together a committee. I'm happy to say it includes a European presence, and as well as North Americans, so that's great. We solicit proposals and forward them to the committee, and then my job is to manage the vote to reach a decision on what we selected by April the 21st. So the closing date's March 31st, and within 3 weeks, we're to go through everything and sort them out, pass our decision along to the gathering chair, and then it all goes up to more important people than me. And then I get to tell the presenters whether or not their proposals were accepted, so that's sensitive, and then establish what each of the presenters needs and assign each one a volunteer. So that sort of pretty well covers the next 2 months. And then we figure out the scheduling with the gathering chair and who goes where and in what location, and gather their statements and pass those all along to the graphic designer. Take care of any cancellations or changes. You can imagine, perhaps you can't, I certainly didn't imagine how huge an organizational task running a conference like this is, because there's so many parts of it. So we really have to adhere to the timeline to get all the things neatly in place and have those beautifully organized experiences that we know so well. So then finally comes to the time of being at the gathering. I get a staff, a group of volunteers, and I manage who goes where, make sure the signs are in place, make sure any changes go to morning announcements, and I answer questions at the registration table. That's my job.
Wow. Okay. So how many people are on your committee?
I have four people. I'm very pleased with them. Their job really is, according to the guidelines, is to help advise me with the selection process. This year we're working with Ben's ideas. So we had done some work already about how to interpret some of the newer guidelines or this year's guidelines. So there's been some interesting discussions back and forth about the philosophy of the program.
So you have four plus yourself, so that's five.
So we can't have a hung vote.
Right, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a couple of the guidelines for the workshops? What are the basic guidelines that you're looking for besides adherence to the theme? And how, in terms of that New Harmonies in the Labyrinth, that could be interpreted many, many ways?
It sure could, and that's, I wouldn't say contentious, but it's certainly provocative. You know, all the guidelines are available on the website with the application package, and they're in for 90-minute programs, either lecture presentation or experiential. And they are divided into novice, intermediate, and advanced levels of participants on the application form, although I don't know if I've ever seen or noticed or had it pointed out to me that was a categorization of the workshops I've been to. But anyway, there it is on the application package. Ben Nicholson is one of the gathering co-chairs, brilliant man, and he cooked up some questions about harmony. We got talking about harmony, and I do a lot of choral singing, and I sing in a gospel choir. And I've sung for years, so I'm very interested in harmony. And I said, you know, Ben, you can't have harmony if everyone's singing the same tune. And indeed, the great Pete Seeger says that harmony is just some notes that are different from what your neighbor's singing. So Ben got onto that idea. He really liked it. He's an architect, and, well, he's a lot of things. I think Ben is one of our era's polymaths, you know. He would be very embarrassed to hear me say that. He couldn't be a more humble man. But Ben was a real early influence on me when I was doing my research for my doctorate. So I'm a real fan of Ben's. So his questions were designed to get people thinking about harmony. I'm just going to pull them up now. I don't know if you have that document there, but I'm bringing it here. Unfortunately, the printer crashed just before. So here's Ben's questions. Given that harmony cannot exist if everyone sings the same line, here's some provocative questions. One, what is particular to your relationship with Labyrinth that is intrinsically different from the practice of others? Two, could a new era of making, experiencing, and reflecting on Labyrinth encourage others to rethink their own practice? Third, are there connections with other disciplines that could shed new light on traditional ways? Now, as you know, this year we're having some amazing things. It's an amazing place to have it in. Historically, New Harmony is one of the utopian societies for which America is really one of the highlights for the rest of the world, of, you know, putting out and manifesting these optimal ideas for human development. So that's the big picture, and the little picture is people really tried to do it there, you know. So that's one aspect of just the site. That's one kind of really radical aspect of it. And another is Cordelia is bringing horses in and reproducing that wonderful image on the pottery vase from, I'm going to get it wrong where it is, and Jeff or Robert Ferry or one of them would set me straight right away, the picture of the horses riding out of the Troy Town maze. She's going to reenact that. She's bringing in some maypole dancers. So there's all kinds of iterations of historical ideas brought to life to show us, you know, to really, really engage us with what is it to reinterpret ancient ideas in a modern form? What is that? So they're really giving us the guidelines, you know, taking the lead there on inviting new thinking like that.
And so if someone is thinking, oh, this is a perfect venue for what I do, what is the process of submitting a workshop proposal? They go on to the TLS website, the www.thelabyrinthsociety.org.
Yep.
And go ahead.
Well, I don't have it in front of me. But it's really intuitively easy to find out where the sign up.
And I think it says if you look under gathering, they're up across the top there. It says gathering. You click on gathering, and then you'll see workshop proposals. Looking for workshop and then you just click on that, and there's a whole registration form. So they have to fill out that registration form.
Yes, they do, and I'd prefer to get it in an email if people can manage that, so it's just easier for me to ship out to my committee. It's very straightforward, but quite demanding. I don't want to put people off, but you do have to focus, and that's a really good thing to do anyway when you're doing a presentation. There's a 250 to 500 word outline, which is really designed to help the applicant focus their ideas. And it gives us as a committee a sense of what it would be like to be in that workshop. The application form is designed to make it easy for you to think, as an applicant, to think through what do you want your 90 minutes to look like.
Are they all 90 minutes? So there's none 60. They're all 90 this time.
My understanding this year is that it's 3 time slots or 4 sessions in each one. Each one is 90 minutes, and then they're either experiential, interactive, or they are presentation lecture format.
Okay, so that means there's 12 slots available?
Not very many, yeah. So we'll
only 12.
We'll be choosing 12, and we'll have to choose some backups. Sometimes things fall through at the last minute and can't disappoint people, so I'm going to try and be real sensitive about that one. Showing up for the Olympics and not being able to race.
Right. About how many proposals do you expect to see, do you think?
Well, I hope plenty. Last year was 25. I wasn't involved in that organization. I'd like to see more this year. I'd like to see it circulated widely. I'd like to see applications from all kinds of people, because we're working with interdisciplinary ideas in a big way this year. I think that the Labyrinth community has really developed. We're a mature community, and but many of us have been working 10 or 15 years in this area and doing some interactive work with interdisciplinary work with in healthcare, in art, in performance, in education, and architecture and design, all kinds of in academics, so as well as the sort of customary ones of ministry and therapy. So I really hope that we get some reports from other labyrinths where people have been wandering. And I take that idea from one of my early, I've been doing this since 1997, and my introduction to it was through academia, and the very earliest labyrinth involvement I had was with the French structuralist Roland Barthes, who had organized a conference in 1971 to study interdisciplinarily the image of the labyrinth and the metaphor of the labyrinth as an interdisciplinary research tool. And he had all kinds of people, the strangest people there, mathematicians and artists and French structuralists and in French. So I was amazed to find this in my research and think, what on earth were these people thinking they were doing at the time? So the person I studied was a mathematician, Pierre Rosenstiel, that Ferry and Sword mentioned in their books, and he was interested in the idea that we all have, all of the researchers in academia, have a labyrinth of their own to research, and they have things of interest to report to the rest of us. And that's, I hope, one of the guiding ideas from Ben's questions is, what do I know? What's my particular area, and how that's such interest to me, and how can I make it of interest to others in these arcane areas that are each our private labyrinths that we've investigated.
So that's what you're going to be looking for when you judge whether a workshop proposal will fit or not, besides it being in, besides it honoring the theme, but this is whether it embodies what you just were talking about.
What she said, yeah. Well.
Yeah, what you said. But
yeah,
it was good, too.
Yeah, well, thank you. And if you could remember while we're recording this, thank goodness.
Yeah.
But here I forgot the notes, so I could actually write it down somewhere. It is written down. What we're doing as a committee is trying to look at the overall flow of the workshops. Like we're trying to put ourselves in the minds of a participant who may or may not be someone like us, or may or may not be interested in what we're interested in, and trying to imagine a track for them through the day. So perhaps this is inevitable, and I'm sure to be frustrated by it, but it really bugs me when all the experiential workshops are all at the same time, and I can't go to all of them, you know. So although how you choose one from Category A, Category B, and Category C, I don't know, and I'm that's where I think I'll be frustrated. But we are trying to do, we're trying out tracking this year of how a person could take this and then that and then that, or they could go using this or... So, and because there's such a lot of history involved in this particular setting and location, then that will certainly be one of the tracks or threads. But you know, I guess what the other when you ask about criteria, I'm looking here that for us individual excellence is important, but also that builds complexity into the program. And then I guess I have personal biases, which I'm going to try and not influence too much, but I have to admit them. Last year, I wasn't going to go, and what they made the decision for me at the last minute was seeing that Jody Lorimer was doing a presentation on the Minotaur and the Paleolithic cave paintings. Well, in my opinion, the Minotaur is greatly underrepresented in labyrinth discourse, and I wanted to find out about that. It was so unusual. So it was a great lecture. She did a wonderful job, and her book was terrific, and it sold like hotcakes. And I think that whole auditorium was bowled over by what she did. And it was very new work. I haven't seen it anywhere. A lot of original sort of research. So it was certainly a presentation one rather than an interactive one, but it really was quite striking and interesting. So you know, to foreground that for people is a real good move. And that responds again to Ben's question, well, what it is that you do that's so unique to you. You know, the labyrinth, the thing with pilgrimages, like the labyrinth always is that you're really retracing tracks other people have gone on. And that's why it's a pilgrimage. You don't invent them. But it's you doing them, you know. You're reiterating it in your own very personal, God-given opportunity for uniqueness. And we really want to see that coming through, that kind of enthusiasm and passion coming through, because that you can convey that to people, then it's exciting.
And what, in your opinion, what makes a good presenter?
Oh, certainly enthusiasm, and that they've responded to the guidelines. And the guidelines are, you know, partly they're delineated out of respect for both the presenter and for the audience. You know, this is a long way for people to come, and there's not a lot of time, and people need to have enough information to judge how they should spend their time. And you can't always say at the beginning of the day whether you should go to this one or should go to that one, but we're always all tearing our hair. Oh, what should I do between the abundance of choices? So the clearer the presenter can be about what he or she is going to be talking about and how, that's very respectful of everyone's time and interest. I would say what I mentioned earlier, that we are asking for what your new, what's your exploration of the labyrinth been? And to me, that reflects a responsibility on behalf of the community, you know? It's like that threefold path of that many of us use in facilitation, of the path of purgation when you go into the labyrinth and you shed your expectations, and then the path of illumination in the center, and then the path of union or communion coming out. You've received a boon, you know, you've received a gift, and it's your responsibility to share it with the rest of the world. And I'd say this is an opportunity on that line, you know, that you've discovered something, you've honed it, you've worked on it, you've maybe sweated blood and tears, and academic blood and tears certainly for some people, to get it as well presented as you can. So to share that feeling about it. Another thing is just technically, can you focus sufficiently to comfortably convey that information and allow for questions and answers? On here I've got a note, tell the story of my first presentation, which was in Denver, and I was very excited about my stuff, which was kind of higher mathematics, which I have to say is not natural for me. And I was so excited, I ran completely over time, way past time, way past the videotape had completely run out, they were taping of that session. And I was so embarrassed about it. It was good, it was good, but it just was not respectful of the time limits. And so after that, I joined Toastmasters, I have to say, and I learned a few things to focus my enthusiasm. So I guess I'd say.
But how do you judge that? Just from a person's? I mean, I guess you can see. If how well written and succinct the person's outline is, or what they've, but it's awfully hard unless you've heard them talk before, to know, you know, some people are excellent writers and write brilliantly, but they fall over themselves and fall on their faces when they have to stand up in front of people.
Putting my hand up here.
Well, yes, I was a presenter last year too, and I know my stuff, but I was told, you know, you sort of got off track a little bit, and I certainly did. And no matter how well defined your outline is, if there's too much information or there's a huge amount that you're just dying to tell everybody, you can go off in tangents really easily.
Well, you certainly can, and as an educator, oh dear. I said, well, I'm laughing because I used to teach in teacher's education, and I taught everybody, and I'd have classes full of everybody from going to be art students to going to be math teachers and going to be art teachers and then going to be physics teachers. And the art students loved going away on the tangents, and the physics and math going to be teachers just hated it. So I had to how to put an outline on a board and say, okay, I'm taking off now, whirl around, okay, coming back now, here we are here. And so you learn the hard way. But, you know, Christiana, you're right, and that's certainly one of the shortcomings of the application process, and maybe something we can think about next year, is that perhaps a taped version might, you know, like an audition tape might have a place. That being said, I don't want to discourage people, and I certainly don't want to limit the application process to very experienced lecturers. I would never have got in the first time if that had been the case, and I did have good material. And, you know, it's the labyrinth, right? Like there's no wasted steps. You had to take all the steps to get where you are now. And to me, that's the part of labyrinth as organizing principle that has to come into play here. So, sighing heavily as it goes now.
Yeah. I know, it's a hard thing. And I just wanted to make mention that we are, the show is on and being recorded, but it's not streaming. We've already gone over the time limit. But I do want to continue with this because it is being recorded. So people who want to listen to it archived will hear the whole thing. So I want to continue. Is it okay with you if we continue a few more minutes?
Sure. Thanks, Christiana. I'd love to.
Okay. All right. The only thing I wanted to address with that is that unlike presentations where the presenters are being paid and you're a paid presenter, while you do make a tiny bit of money off of this and you are paid a small amount, it's certainly not like a regular gig, where you're the keynote presenter or anything like this. I mean, these people that are doing the concurrent workshops are not the keynote presenters. And so I would think, while it might be helpful to judge, it might, that kind of thing where you have a taped interview might be a little daunting for people, in that particular situation, I would imagine.
But you're so there, you're balancing the needs of the audience to, or the participants to be able to count on a worthwhile and well-organized presentation, perhaps versus the need of the presenters to explore what they're doing, to explore their, you know, to value or valorize the content over the delivery, because people have to learn, you know, they do, and
right,
they all were
right
there once, and it's, we have to start somewhere, so I was, you know, later on, I'm going through your questions later on, I wrote that unfortunately we don't have a student research section like we do it would in an academic conference, so you're just there. So I guess everyone just has to be patient and responsive, and people need to try and practice their speeches beforehand, and I mean, some are very experienced people, they won't need to do anything of the sort, but for newcomers to public speaking, it's a learning process, just try your best, and certainly the content is more important, I would say, than the delivery of it. Because, you know, we're an experienced organization now, and our interest is we're almost mainstream, and we should act like we're mainstream. So that means accepting new ideas and not being afraid to give them the space they need to develop.
So how does TLS, once the workshop presenter is selected, how does TLS support them?
Totally.
Go ahead.
So we're good. We let them know before the end of April, so they've got lots of time. We ascertain their needs, and we keep checking them until shortly before everyone takes off on the airplane, within reason, you know. We assign a volunteer for the gathering presentation at the time, and I'm not sure how far in advance that person comes online, certainly on Zoom, but certainly once you get to the gathering, you have a volunteer to help you, and you get paid an honorarium. I think that's as far as the guidelines go. That's as far as I know about it. I know that my task is to make sure we have volunteers and make sure everyone's doing what they need to do and that the presenters have what they need in order to do the best job that they can. But I can only
So the presenters give you a list of things that they will need for their workshop in the room, and you make sure that it's there for them. Is that correct?
As far as I can, Jana. As far as space goes and materials and supplies goes, that being said, centers are responsible for their own IT needs. You know, if you need a projector and a computer and whatnot, you have to bring that yourself and be responsible for making it go and be responsible for backup if it doesn't go. You know, so bring your slides, what are they called now, transparencies. So that's closer to the time, then we'll find out more about that, but that's what I've been told, is that that the gathering does not provide information technology backup. You bring your own. Mm-hmm. And the other thing you bring is your own handouts for people.
Does TLS allow presenters who weren't selected in other years to reapply? Can they apply for this year, even though they applied in previous years and they weren't selected?
Well, there's nothing in the guidelines about that, and there's nothing either about feedback, which from both sides of the selection table is a pretty touchy subject, you know. I mean, I've been a juror, and I've been the juried, and you certainly, as someone juried out, you want to know what was going on there. So, but there's nothing in the guidelines to do that, and we don't have the resources really to do that. Like, I can't go back and say, look, if you fix this and you fix that, well, we could think about it. But that being said, I'd say go ahead and apply, because it's very, you know, I see two possibilities here around that. One is perhaps that the earlier presentation has been honed over the intervening time. It's been developed, it's clearer, it's more focused, and that's just a normal developmental process. If you keep working on your stuff, that's going to, you know, you're going to improve at it. And the other is that workshop programs, they're animals unto themselves, you know, like there's a whole feeling and a flow to them, and what might work at one workshop might not work at another workshop program, you know what I mean? So perhaps this year the program can accommodate the concepts more easily because of the context.
If they weren't selected, they can come up with a new proposal and reapply.
Sure. Oh, sure. As far as I can tell, I don't see anything to say they can't.
And what if they were selected? Like if somebody had done a proposal last year, Can they submit a new proposal and apply for this new theme and be also part of the process?
Oh, sure. Again, there's nothing in the guidelines about that. What I've thought about that is that we want to give everyone a chance while keeping in mind that the needs of the audience varies from Labyrinth complete newbies to much more experienced people. And from an educator's perspective, that's my background, there's many kinds of learning styles, you know, like some people do really well listening to things, some people have to be kinesthetic learners or visual learners or acoustic learners. So there's no, and here's where I thought of, there's no student research section, unfortunately, and unlike an arts exhibition, there's no current prevailing or overriding aesthetic. So you're not juried out because style, as you might be at an art exhibition, and from the sort of academic model, there's not really a place for rank student work. You're just up against everybody else who applies. So I'm really trying to find a balance here between giving everyone a chance and giving new presenters a chance while meeting the expectations of the audience, who are extremely varied. All kinds of people come to these gatherings.
Right.
That's the great thing about them. But to try and, you can't make everybody happy, but you have to kind of try, you know.
Right. So what do you expect to see this year that maybe hasn't been done previously at other gatherings? I mean, you sort of touched on it earlier, but in terms of harmony and the theme, is my understanding also is an aspect of this is the idea of pilgrimage, and what a great place to pilgrimage to, if not the center of the place where there is one of the oldest labyrinths in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think you might see that hasn't been done previously?
Well, I haven't been to all of them, and there's much more experienced people to answer that question, so I'm just can only speak from my own experience, which is quite limited. But every gathering I've gone to, the workshop programs were tremendous, and I got something out of each and every one I went to. And there was also ones I went to, and I didn't go to the one next door, and I wished I'd been at the one next door, you know, but that's very personal, and I think that's like an embarrassment of riches, which is great. It should be like that. It shouldn't be, oh, I'll go to this one because it's the least boring. It should be, oh, I have to choose this over that, and I hate having to do that. So that's one thing. Just we're really hoping that the wealth of experience and adventuresomeness is going to be represented in what comes in. But also, the Labyrinth community has grown up, and it's diversified, and we're almost mainstream, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what people are bringing from other elements and other disciplines into the Labyrinth, because the Labyrinth is an organizing principle, and you can turn it out to anything. Ooh, that's one of the great things about it, that it provides access to a metaphor to approach almost everything else in the whole world, so that's huge. But as I say, when I met Ben was working on, oh, God, he was so impressive, and he still is, developed. But when I met Ben first, or Ben's ideas first, he was working on, he'd ripped up the floorboards in the Medici Library in Florence, and that was designed by Michelangelo. And the floorboards covered the pavement stones, and the pavement stones were all different sacred geometry designs. And they were coincided with certain of the library carols. Now, libraries in those days were organized by subject, and all the books around that subject were chained to the library carol. So, and that was very much subject to what the individual librarian thought ought to be there. So it was really an opinionated place to be. And Michelangelo was an opinionated sculptor. So beside each of these library carols with their books and their subject matter and their opinions and their more or less approved of by the church fathers, he put a pavement stone that represented what he thought that subject was about. And what Ben did was analyze the pavement stones in terms of geometry. And what Ben came up with was the idea of pediahaptic. And I have never seen that word used by anyone else. And it's just a testament to his genius, I think. But what it means is, it's pedia as in encyclopedia. So encyclo means to, it encompasses everything, and then pedia is the learning. And pedia itself is the same root word as pedagogue. So the pedagogue was somebody that took, the slave that took the child, the Roman senatorial class child, to school, to the place where he would learn, or the teacher he would learn. So the pedagogue was the one that walked with you to the place of learning. So Ben's word, pediahaptic, refers to, in this situation with the Medici Library, that as you walked along the path, you were learning things that you happened upon. So the haptic part had two meanings. Haptic being one, being just, it just falls into your lap. It's just happy. It just arrives there suddenly, or a transitive word be the happy is the French. You grab it, you know, you like a goose grabs it. You'd use happy for that. So you would you'd be walking and you'd reach out and grab something, or you'd be walking and something would fall in your lap. But in either case, your learning had to do with your travels and the steps that you took. So that's Ben's mind.
So you can wow.
Yeah. So,
well, FYI here. Ben and Cordelia are brother and sister too. So yeah, okay, that there is a connection too that I needed to put in there, because the understanding of why these two people happen to be hosting this labyrinth event.
Yeah.
But that's fascinating, and I can't wait to hear his keynote speech. He certainly was very involved with all of the other architects and geometrists at the last gathering, and they had their heads together busily ping-ponging with their brain waves the whole entire time. It was pretty fun to watch them.
Wasn't it, though? Well, so, and I see there's going to be world-class art installations, including his Venice Biennale installation, and Jim Buchanan's going to be there, and so I don't think we've seen artwork of that quality or that kind of international significance at a gathering before. So it's part of, you know, the TOS has grown up. This is a big deal, and I'm really excited that I can, you know, provide the coordination for a part of it with a company like that. I think it's going to be an outstanding, memorable, wonderful event. And also,
well, thank you. Thank you so much, Vanessa, for joining me and staying on a little bit longer and being so patient to waiting for me to get on. And I really appreciate it. But we are out of time. I do want to get off by 2:30. It's my time, 2:30, so you can get on your way. Thank you so much. It is my intention to enlighten Labyrinth neophytes and support Labyrinth veterans with guests like you, who provide a depth of information and personal experience not available through other sources. And I certainly, if that isn't evident in this conversation today, I don't know what is. So many blessings on your path. And as the PR person for the upcoming gathering, we have a lot to talk about. I can't wait to continue this conversation in emails to support this whole concept that is made now much more clear to me. So I really thank you for this time. It's helped me tremendously to understand what is the impetus and the intention of this gathering coming up, and I'm really looking forward to it. I've never been to New Harmony, been to Chautauqua, and it reminds me a little bit the flavor of it, a little bit. So I am looking so forward to it. So many, many blessings on your path, and I think we're going to try to sign off now. So we'll talk some more.
We will. A lot to talk about. See you in November. Bye.
Okay. Namaste. You've been listening to Labyrinth in the News in the live category on blogtalkradio.com with your host, Christiana. Please join me March 12th when my guest will be Stephanie Blackton, the TLS World Labyrinth Day Coordinator, as we discuss the global World Labyrinth Day event, its mission, and history. Have a blessed week in Lakesh. Actually, it's March 8th. Have a blessed week in Lakesh. Namaste.